shampoo boy? JT is a shampoo boy?
And a darn good one, too. You should be proud.
Proud, honey? My son is working in a beauty salon. What if this gets out?
What is wrong with working in a beauty salon? I work in a beauty salon.
Well, yeah, but you're a woman, and he's a guy, and guys are supposed to work with their hands.
He is working with his hands.
No, no, he's working with his fingers.
Broken, seemed like all was lost. What would be the future? Could you pay the cost? You wonder, will there ever be a second time around?
Hello, and welcome to Gayest Episode Ever, the podcast where we talk about the LGBT-focused episodes of classic sitcoms, which is to say, the very special episodes that also happen to be the very queer episodes. I'm Drew Mackey.
I'm Glenn Lakin, or maybe it's Suzanne Summers.
It's clearly you.
Oh.
Yeah. She would not accept her invitation to come here today, so. And in case that intro did not tip you off, today we are talking about Step by Step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are you saying, is that a question?
I think people will be surprised that, number one, we are talking about it at all. And number two, that I'm referring to it as a classic sitcom, which I guess it is.
But I disagree on both counts. I don't think people will be surprised to talk about Step by Step or to consider it a classic sitcom. It was part of the TGIF lineup. In fact, it was in the shared universe with Family Matters. Mm-hmm. So where's the surprise coming from? Where's the shock coming from?
I think classic denotes a certain level of quality that I do not feel Step by Step ever had.
Wow.
So it was on TV for 7 seasons, 6 of which were on ABC, the final one on CBS. And it comes from a lineage of classic sitcoms, including Family Matters and Perfect Strangers, actually. But I don't think it was ever on the level of all those other things, which is kind of saying a lot because I don't really expect that much from like Full House, which is also in the same family of sitcoms. I don't feel like it lasted in syndication as long, and I don't feel like it made as big of an impact as any of those other 3 shows.
Well, I mean, like, the pitch was trashy Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that was, like, the official pitch, but, like, that's sort of what everyone knew it was, and I think it lowered the bar a little bit to the level where, I don't know, you tuned in to enjoy it. Like, the Lamberts were crass mm-hmm. and gross, mm-hmm. and what's Carol's family's last name?
The Fosters.
That's right, the Fosters, and they're, like, you know, the refined ones. And so it just had that conflict that Brady Bunch was missing. Mm-hmm. And even if it was played at the broadest of beats, you tuned in for it, it worked. It was fine. Also, Cody was hot. He's not in this episode that we're talking about.
He debuts a few episodes after that. The episode we're talking about is actually the 5th episode of the series. It is called Frank and Son. It originally aired October 18th, 1991. And this is the episode where Frank, played by Patrick Duffy, becomes concerned that his son is working in Suzanne Summers' hair salon.
And for listeners who, like you, don't respect Step by Step, may not be aware that the concept is, I mean, it's Brady Bunch. It's
shitbag Brady Bunch.
But, you know, one classy family marries a trashy family.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So, yeah, the Frank, Patrick Duffy's garbage family moves in with the prissy family that Suzanne Summers has. They never say what happens to the original Mrs. Lambert or the original Mr. Foster. We don't know if they are dead or divorced or missing.
Or married together, ran off together.
That, I know. Did you watch the pilot for this by any chance?
No.
So this is 5 episodes after the pilot. The pilot is Frank and Carol getting back from a singles cruise to Jamaica that
they're still talking about.
They're still talking about, because they secretly got married on the cruise and then came back to Port Washington, Wisconsin, and haven't told their families yet that they got secret married and are going to move in together.
Sort of irresponsible parenting.
Very irresponsible. And actually, in the first episode, Carol is like, we have to get a divorce. Like, we can't do this. I can't do this to my family. But then they bring the families together and then they become a blended family.
I remember one of the Lamberts spitting on their hands to shake Dana's hand. It was probably JT.
Probably JT, but it could have been Al.
Yeah.
This seems like an Al thing to do as well. I don't remember that much. I didn't watch the pilot all that closely, but I just wanted to know how far from that we've gotten. And like, they're still, these families are still feeling each other out.
I mean, my problem with the series is that in the later seasons, it focused on like the older children more. Mm-hmm. And Dana and JT go to a community college together. And
even though Dana should have gone to like Vassar or
and
something.
That is, I have that bone to pick with a lot of sitcoms. And this is not me griping against community college. I think community colleges have a very important place in our society. But when you have a brainy child character whose entire focus is to go to a celebrated private school, mm-hmm. like, don't just rob them of that dream just because it works better to keep them in town.
I agree.
Like, think ahead. Set your sitcom in a city that either has that private school they want to go to mm-hmm. or a great state school.
Yeah, that is weird.
Like Alex P. Keaton.
Where did he go to school?
Somewhere in Ohio or whatever.
Okay. But he wasn't living in the house after some point. Does he go off to college or is he still living with his parents and going to college?
I forget too.
Yeah, that's a weird problem that you have with any TV show that deals with high school age characters is that
growing pains.
That clock is ticking and those kids eventually have to become instant adults or leave. And the only show that ever actually tried to do it right was the Felicia Rashad show. And then it didn't work because Lisa Bonet didn't want to do it. But that would have been like the primary, I guess Grown-ish did that properly now where she is having her own show and she's in college and she's going to be in college for 4 years. Like, however it takes.
Or Gilmore Girls, where Rory, I mean, it's not a sitcom, but where Rory wants to go to Harvard, decides Yale is better for her, and it's obviously closer mm-hmm. to Stars Hollow. So she still gets to be on the show and have a rich and fulfilling college life until her breakdown.
Is that really what the town on Gilmore Girls is called, Stars Hollow?
Yeah.
It sounds like a little too twee. It sounds like a woman's retreat or something. I don't know.
You should watch the episode where they're celebrating, I guess, their bicentennial or some sort of founding. Mm-hmm. And they set up the origin of their town through like mannequins and pre-recorded voice. And it's kind of haunting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember the episode of that very subject that they did on King of the Hill?
No.
It's really good. They want to celebrate old Arlen days. And they find out that it used to be called Arlensville. And then before Arlensville, it was Harlotsville because it was like where all the prostitutes were. So then the city embraces its like legacy of prostitution and Peggy is horrified. It's such a good episode.
Well, this show takes place in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Actually, I wanted to talk about You're Making It Worse before we get into the specifics of the show. The reason I wanted to do this show is that another podcast I listen to that is for gay people is called You're Making It Worse. I describe it as like, it's like The View for gays who read. Read books.
Okay.
Yeah. It's hosted by Elliot Glazer, H. Allen Scott, and Brent Sullivan. And I don't know which one of them brought this up because, as with many podcasts hosted by men, I have trouble differentiating their voices. I'm sure someone has that problem with us and they can't
tell. I'm Glenn. This one's Glenn.
And I'm Drew. See? Easy to tell apart. Drew's going to continue talking. And they said that they were watching something on Hulu and they did the autoplay thing where it just gave them an episode of Step by Step. And the episode was the episode we're doing. And they talked about the trope on sitcoms we grew up with of a family member, usually a parent, being very concerned that his son is emasculine or effeminate, if not outright gay, and how that is kind of a fucked up thing to make kids watch. Because if you are a child who maybe is worried about measuring up to expectations of boyhood and manhood, that creates a lot of mental trauma that you internalize in a very real way, even though this is just a dumb sitcom. This isn't something you relate to at all?
Yes.
Can you remember any episodes that like might have not triggered? What's the word? Affected the way you comported yourself?
I mean, many. But even with Step by Step, Mark, a child who does not appear in this episode, he is the middle foster. No, he's the youngest foster child, and he is a nerd. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the ways that sitcoms characterized nerds was borderline effeminate. They're sissified. And so like all of his allergies, his inability at sports, it all sort of read as, oh, this poor little queer child who's going to struggle moving in with this family of like ultra masculine children.
And also a lot of times when they have that sort of character and they want to unqueer him a little bit, the solution is to make him a horny little shit and kind of like Steve Urkel. Like Steve Urkel doesn't read as queer at all because he's so like horny for Laura that like they just nail, that's like one of his only real personality traits. And that creates like this shitty binary of either you're a sissy or you're horny for girls and you can't just be a person. That figures into this episode a lot, actually.
Yeah, I really want to do a deep dive into Stefan Urkel one of these days.
This can be one of these episodes. This can be one of the Patreon bonus episodes where we talk about subjects that don't really fit the model for what we do in a regular episode. And also, I mean, as of this week, we are in deep in Miller Boyette Productions territory, so that would be very on theme for us. The one I can think about, I don't remember how old I was when I watched this, but I was older than DJ on Roseanne, I think. I think I was a little bit older than him, but there's an episode where he wants to dress up as a witch for Halloween. And
I'm glad you didn't say Christmas.
Yeah, well, that's a different societal conflict. But for some reason, that stung in a weird sort of way where I was like, oh, shit. Like, even something as stupid as Halloween, where you theoretically can dress up as whatever you want, you're still constrained by what everyone else thinks is appropriate for you, and that really fucking sucks.
I'm sorry you went through that.
Well, I mean, it's just sort of hard to get away from. There is also that we talked about it in the John Goodman Show episode we talked about in season one, where DJ learns about what gay people are. And Dan does a very good job diplomatically explaining homosexuality. And when DJ decides that, he's like, oh, I don't think I want to date boys. He's like, oh, thank God. And even then, it's just like a little fucking sting.
Yeah, even Homer's phobia, which we talked about, mm-hmm. It ends with Homer coming to terms with the fact that Bart might be gay, but in the end being relieved.
This is another reason that TV kind of fucked
actually, me. Actually, that's not how the episode ends. I know you brought that up earlier.
Homer's phobia? Homer?
He says it to Bart, like, okay, but then the last shot is, like, Lisa explaining to Bart that, like, Homer thinks he's gay.
And Bart like, being like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually end with Homer wiping his brow about it. So I think we should cut the mention of Homer's phobia out.
No, I think it should be there because he says that like, hey, however you want to be is fine with me. So that's how it ends with him.
That's a good version of what we're talking about.
Yes, but even that is problematic because so for the reason I'm just going to explain, a reason TV fucks me up is that it implies that these sort of biases are inherent and you have to have a conflict and like talk through in order to make the person realize that their bias is wrong and they should be more accepting and that like however their son wants to be is just fine. And that happens because that's how a sitcom works. Like you have a conflict and then you talk about it and it resolves itself. That's not what happens in real life.
But that is what happens in real life, unfortunately. It's like every minority has to like fight for rights that should just be obvious.
Yes, that part happens. But like my real life father is never going to have that sort of conflict and tidy resolution, and it's never going to be okay at the end of a half hour the way it is on TV. So watching sitcoms kind of fucked me up because I was thinking that that's just how it worked.
And you were waiting for the conflict.
And it never happens. And
just silent judgment.
You can't solve it, especially when you're a kid. You can't really solve it. And
invite me to your parents' place. We'll have some hijinks. I'll fix this.
That'll actually be really fun. Okay, that'll also be a bonus episode. Yeah. And I say this fucked me up and probably fucked up a lot of people who ended up being queer on some level is that like I have this theory of like personality where like you're born, you're a kid, you kind of don't really have a filter when you're really young and like you're just being yourself. And then as you get rejected or like jostled around by other people, you start to modify your behavior to be ostracized less. And then you do that so much that you kind of forget whatever that pure version of yourself was. And then you're an adult and you're like, okay, well, I don't really care about that sort of social judgment as much as I did when I was a kid because I'm not in high school and I can get away from it. But I don't know how to get back to being that pure version of that little kid. And maybe that's just impossible. And that's probably something that straight people deal with to a certain degree as well. But it's rough learning that young that like, oh, these things that are coming very natural to you are not okay.
Well, I mean, I do think that everyone struggles with that. Like we all, well, most of us sign on to these unwritten rules mm-hmm. and monitor ourselves and modulate how we behave. And if anything, I think a lot of homophobia might stem from straight people thinking that we are too free and that they have constrained themselves to get married young, have the same job that you're miserable in just to buy a house and pay for your family. And they see us doing what we want to do and
talking about bullshit sitcoms all day.
Yeah. And also, like, why the whole like boomer versus millennial conflict is a thing is because they get boomers seem or might just be angry that like we are trying to make our lives look how we want them to look. I mean, part of that is we were forced to, like, the job market is not what it was when boomers were young. You cannot actually just put on a suit, print out your resume and walk down Main Street and get a job. Like, stop saying that. And so we've had to sort of carve out. I say we, I'm not a millennial, but younger generations have had to sort of carve out their own existence and define what livelihood is, which is, I guess, part of the conflict in this episode where Frank just can't immediately wrap his brain around the fact that his son would not want or not be equipped for the life he is making for him, which is modeled after Frank's own life.
Right. Not only is he not prepared to deal with that, it's never even occurred to him that that wouldn't just be the obvious thing. And he gets really rattled when people like push back on him about that. As I mentioned earlier, this is a Miller Boyette production, which is a phrase we heard a lot in the 80s and we don't really hear anymore. The last Miller Boyette production was a Olsen Twins sitcom called Two of a Kind that I don't think lasted very long.
I'm familiar.
I don't think I ever saw it, but the second episode of Step by Step features Steve Urkel jetpacking into their backyard, and he's just like there hanging out with Mark for the entire episode. Not coincidental, because they were kind of trying to shoehorn in Urkel the way Family Matters spun off from Perfect Strangers. But it is nice that these are all related shows. Also, Urkel showed up on Full House as well, so theoretically these characters all exist in the same universe. Also, if you are a subscriber to our Patreon feed, you can go listen right now to an episode we've recorded all about Perfect Strangers and queer-ishness that we perceive in that. But we talk a lot more about the Miller Boyette family of TV shows in that episode. So patreon.com/gayestepisodeever. Give us money. The theme song for Perfect Strangers, Full House, Family Matters, and this show are all composed by the same team of Jesse Frederick and Bennett Slavey. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Jesse Frederick and Bennett something.
They've given me so much.
They're excellent songs. If you had to rank those four theme songs in terms of...
Well, Perfect Strangers is first, obviously.
Obviously. Iconic.
Full House is second.
Okay.
What is the third and fourth?
Family Matters and then this.
And then Family Matters and this.
It's weird.
But this one is great because it has the title in the theme.
I don't think any of the other ones do. I think you're right about that. It's also insanely catchy. And the only reason that I blasted the step-by-step theme out of my brain is because I had to watch Perfect Strangers to record the stuff for that episode. And they are fucking earworms. And I may not think step-by-step is a great show, but that is a really well-written, catchy theme song. Can't take that away from them.
Cannot. But this doesn't reach the heights that Perfect Strangers does.
Do you remember Going Places?
Vaguely.
It was another one. It starred, I always forget him, Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And then this actress named Hallie Todd, who is the daughter of, do you remember we talked about the Dick Van Dyke Show? Mm-hmm. We talked about Anne Gilbert, who's Grandma Yetta on The Nanny. Her daughter, Hallie Todd, Stacey Keenan, who would later go on to Step by Step, and Christopher Castile, who played Mark. Those two were both on that show together, and then I think it only lasted one or two seasons, and then they both jumped to Step by Step together. This show existed because of Dallas. ABC had a contract with Patrick Duffy that said that they would create a show for him after Dallas ended. This was the show. And then when it came to – literally could not find Shitbag Brady Bunch in any of the literature surrounding the development of the show, or anyone even acknowledging that they were – repurposing the Brady Bunch formula, but that's what they decided on. And it made sense that Patrick Duffy is like sexy icon from a different era. Why don't we pair him with Suzanne Summers, who's very, very similarly well-known and instantly recognizable and a TV star.
I think they both like act the shit out of this.
They're really good. They have really good chemistry together and they seem like they're having a good time on the show. I mean, they were on it for 7 years altogether. And it's weird thinking about like all the stuff Suzanne Summers done. This is the thing she's technically best known for, just because Like, she was on this for so much longer than she ever was on Three's Company.
But she'll still just be known for Three's Company more, like, even though she was on it.
Okay. So
for
then,
fewer years.
So then cumulative hours, this is she spent more time playing Carol Foster than she played anything else.
Yes.
Have you ever seen She's the Sheriff?
No.
It was her starring TV role follow-up. It is exactly what the title would make you think it is.
I'm familiar with it. I just have actively never watched it.
Well, you should. I think you'd get a kick out of it. Kind of in the way that, like, Jennifer Slept Here is, like, a bizarre curiosity and not unentertaining. Also that. I guess Suzanne Somers also known for notably,
Thighmaster.
I was going to say notably not being dead now, because she was diagnosed with inoperable cancer a long time ago. And she was like, no, thanks. I'm not going to do chemo. I'm going to do whatever she's doing.
All right. She – was it holistic medicine or was it –
it was something that was very controversial and alleged to be pseudoscience. And I guess
she has a pseudoscience skincare. Isn't she the one who, like, is associated with, like, those melon skincare products?
I mean, that sounds like her. I didn't want to invest too much time in, like, all of her, like, fake science stuff, but, like, she's not dead. So, like, something happened there. I'm not saying she was right, but she's not dead.
I think the science is being rich and living well.
That might be true. Yeah. Not being able to worry about stuff and being Suzanne Somers and have a sunny outlook on life at all times. When they were casting the show, they wanted to pull in ringers who were, like, known teen actors. And that included Stacey Keenan, who, before Going Places, was on My Two Dads, known quantity. And then Brandon Call, who plays JT, was the original Hobie Buchanan on Baywatch. And then Sasha Mitchell, who plays Cody, who again shows up in a few episodes as, like, the surfer dude cousin.
Kind of.
Yeah. Was on Dallas. He played a relative of Patrick Duffy's character on Dallas.
He's also an action star.
Is he really?
He was in at least one action movie. He knows Kung Fu or some other form of martial arts.
That sounds about right. That seems like who that character would know.
Mark, the actor who played Mark, was in Beethoven.
He was. He played a very similar character.
Like, it came out around the same time, so I don't know if he was started filming that first or...
So it was, this was the thing that he was, I guess Going Places might have been the thing that he was famous for, but he was basically known for this. And then the others were unknowns. But the reason I'm fairly certain he was not a sought after must get for the show is that he was not the original Mark. As you pointed out, you can tell when you watch the opening credits.
Yes.
It's really weird when someone points out to you that Mark was
not in any of the group shots.
No. And in fact, there is another. So Brendan is the youngest Lambert child. He's like six or so. And he's short and has like a mop of brown hair. And then there's another child who looks just like that with a mop of brown hair, who's the original Mark. And if you're looking at all these group scenes, you're like, who the fuck is that? Like, who's this like creeper child that's like weaseled his way into the family? That does also make sense that in the closing shot, when everyone is on the roller coaster, Mark is on the ground waving up at them.
With the aunt and the grandma.
Yeah.
But it makes sense because, of course, he wouldn't be on a roller coaster.
No, he was
a child crippled by phobias.
Right. It does make sense, but it's super, like, I also, maybe that was not part of the original Mark character. We don't really know how he was played. But it's weird how, we just talked about how Full House had the wrong Danny Tanner in the original version. They had to reshoot all the scenes. They're like, nah, it's fine. We don't really care. No one will really notice. And I guess we didn't notice because this is not something I really realized until very much later in my life. Can we talk about the death roller coaster, that like architecturally unsound roller coaster that should not exist?
Oh, because it's like on sand?
It's on sand. So they filmed the opening scene at Magic Mountain, which is in Santa Clarita, which is nowhere near any real body of water. But they CGI'd out the parking lot and put in what I guess is supposed to be a Wisconsin lake. And it's like beautiful turquoise lapping waves on a sandy beach. And like the struts of the roller coaster go right down into the sand, right where the water is. It's like, that's not a sustainable structure. They're all going to die.
I had a nightmare about this roller coaster when I was a child. I dreamt that I flew off of it, like as you get to the crest or whatever. And I mean, I floated gently to the ground, but it was terrifying at the start.
It's kind of fun. Was it specifically the step-by-step roller coaster?
Yep.
Have you been on the real version of it at Magic Mountain?
No.
Do you want to?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll make that a Patreon thing.
Glenn's screaming.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the other weird thing about the opening credits is the presence of Patrick Adarbo and Peggy Ray. Is that what you decided her name was?
We didn't decide it. Her parents or agent did.
You're the one who confirmed that like it's Ray and not Rhea or Rhea or anything.
Did I? Cool.
I mean, it's on the record. We can go back and play the record if you don't believe me. it's weird that they're there and they got Judy Winslow out of existence after the first season because they decided that maybe Carol doesn't need a wife, a mother and sister. She doesn't need a wife
either. I mean, it's a lot of characters.
Oh, a lot of fucking characters on this show.
Yeah, there's...
Plus Cody.
Eight, yeah, I was going to say, 8 primary family members, Cody, mm-hmm. and then the grandma and aunt.
No wonder you have kids not appearing in whole episodes like Mark, who just does not appear in this episode that seems like he would have something to add to it, given that he's the not traditionally masculine boy. But no, he sets this one out. Sorry, Mark. Unless I'm mistaken, Step by Step never once cracked the top 20 overall for any of the 7 years it was on. That doesn't mean it was doing badly. And the first season it aired, it was the 33rd most watched show, which doesn't seem great. But then like you look at what it was next to, it was tied with Nurses and the third season of The Simpsons. So I'm like, oh, that's actually not terrible. Like The Simpsons, people were watching The Simpsons.
Love so. Third season.
Yeah. Great. One of the best seasons. It was right ahead of Blossom and right behind Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Remember that?
I do.
So that was a box office failure. That was a ratings failure. It didn't get ratings high enough to justify the money that was going into it. And it was just doing, like, Step by Step was doing worse than that. And it lasted 7 seasons. I guess it probably wouldn't have been cheap because you did have to pay all those people to be in, like, the least watched TV show of this season, Get a Life with Chris Elliott. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah, of course. I watched it a lot.
That was the least watched show.
That oh, year. Really?
Yeah, the absolute bottom. Not a bad show. And again, a television curiosity. Fascinating to watch. I think it's all on YouTube. The episode we are talking about drew 21 million viewers and was the 32nd most watched show this week, meaning it actually outpaced Family Matters, its lead-in, and it tied with 2020, which would have aired at 10 p.m. that same night.
What horrible scandal was that broken in 2020?
So I'm sure something that like really took the wind out of your TGIF high. I don't know why I was allowed to watch 2020. It usually like made me scared about serial killers or like disease or killer bees or something. It was directed by Rich Corell, who played Richard Rickover on Leave It to Beaver, and whose father, Charles Corell, played Andy on Amos and Andy. When I say played, I mean voiced. If you don't know why that's awkward, just Google Amos and Andy. There's a reason that's awkward. He's also a prolific TV director. And it was written by Robert Grifford and Howard Archer, who almost exclusively wrote Miller Boyette sitcoms, and who got their start co-writing an episode of Head of the Class.
I want their career.
Yeah, it seems like they had a pretty good time with it. Oh, we can jump to commercial after this. Yeah. One more weird thing about Christopher Castile being Mark number two. So the actor who originally was hired to play that character was named Jarrett Lennon. And Christopher Castile was the original. Did you watch Hey Arnold? Were you too old for Hey Arnold?
I was too old for Hey Arnold.
There's a character named Eugene Horowitz?
I wasn't too old for Hey Arnold. I just didn't like it. It was off-putting to me.
I
may have also been too old.
Because he had a weird football-shaped head, and it's gross.
Yeah. There's just like, I didn't like those characters.
So there's a character named Eugene on that show. And initially, Christopher Castile voiced that character. And when this child actor, Jarrett Lennon, and Christopher Castile flip-flopped. So Mark took over that role and Jarrett took over his role in Hey Arnold. And I don't know why that kind of stuff happens, but it often happens. I just must be just a weird coincidence. Or they're both adept at playing a certain sort of nerd and both those characters are that kind of nerd. And I actually don't remember what Eugene was. On that note, Hey Arnold, our favorite show, I think let's take a commercial now.
Okay, bye.
Hey, Glenn, ask me if we're having a good month.
Like, personally?
Well, professionally, at least. Glenn, I'm very pleased to announce that not only is Gayest Episode Ever having a good month, not only is Gayest Episode Ever having its best month, but in fact, we're looking to double our previous best month record ever. And we still got a good chunk of February left.
Our podcast seems to have the momentum of a runaway freight train. Why are we so popular?
Honestly, that plug in the AV Club last week is helping a lot. But also, a lot of you people being referred from there are staying and having listened to our other episodes. And for that, we say thank you.
Gratitude is a thought crime.
Another thing we're thankful for is 5-star reviews on iTunes, because it gives us power. One nice review came from E. Kennedy, who said, Glenn and Drew are so funny, and I love their insights into all these shows. 10 out of 10 have recommended this to so many of my pals. Love you too. Which is nice. And thank you. Please, recommending us personally to all the queer TV fans in your life is probably the best way to help our show out, short of iTunes reviews.
Inspector Gaggett, which I hope is some sort of gay thing, also gave us 5 stars specifically for our very Brady Christmas episode. They said, Listening to two intelligent guys dissect gay themes in this classic TV movie makes me feel not so alone. It's a magical time to be alive. Aw.
For only that reason. And Haozi Wang said we're good for talking about non-gay stuff, saying they also touch on issues other than queerness, like problematic portrayals of women or people who are fat, admitting their blind spots on issues that don't relate to their life experiences along the way. So fun and so smart. If you like queer culture, don't miss. Thank you. We are trying our damnedest to be respectful of perspectives that aren't our own, especially on the episodes where it's just the two of us.
Being gay and white.
And male and cisgendered.
Along with other privileges.
But do tell us when we skip over something that you think we should have talked about.
Because in the end, that makes this show better. Speaking of helping us out, do we have any new Patreon people to thank?
Yes. As always, anyone who gives $3 or more a month gets an on-air thank you and a random compliment from the box of compliments. And this week we have 5 beautiful, thoughtful, generous people to thank. Glenn, if you're ready.
I'm not ready. I had to go get the box. Jingle jangle.
What of the popular drug? Why do you bring that up?
Because I'm on it.
Okay, great. You should be on it more, I think. It's not doing enough. First, thank you, Don Mike.
As sexy as Marge Simpson fan art, a community I have not delved into.
Just Google Marge
Simpson.
Yeah, okay.
I had that problem with Penny from Inspector Gadget, actually.
Yeah, I had that problem with Princess Daisy once. It was not okay. Margaret Wu.
Demonstrably better overall than David Schwimmer. I thought that's a demon stably. I was like, oof. That's a fun name.
Okay. Chris Burns.
You are the Ted Danson of whatever the hell it is. Not dads, what?
That you do.
Oh, you are the Ted Danson of whatever it is that you do.
Jeffrey Worrell.
As righteous as Judith Light in a pantsuit. That's a powerful compliment.
And finally, Henley McKeag, who upped their monthly contribution from $3 to $5.
As fun as an episode of I Love Lucy without the complication of them all hating each other. I don't think they all hate each other.
Lucy and Ethel liked each other enough that, like...
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the characters, right? Because the actresses, I think, had some problems with each other.
Well, I mean...
There's the whole, like, must be 30 weight, 30 pounds, must be 30 pounds overweight.
Oh, I didn't know about
part of the contract.
Okay, yeah, that's awkward.
But it may have been 10 pounds.
Lucy put Vivian Vance on her follow-up show, so that says something about them. I assume they all hate each other. They're all in hell now, so.
What?
If you want to hear me mumble a compliment.
That's me.
Oh, sorry.
If you want to hear me mumble a compliment from the box of compliments, go to patreon.com/gayestepisodeever or click the link in the show notes.
This money seriously helps justify all the time I'm sinking into editing out moist mouth noises.
True. What's the sound of two fleshlights kissing?
That is the worst thing you've ever said. So unpleasant. Dark Doodle is my superhero name. Okay, so we're back. Glenn, are you more of a Lambert or a Foster?
I'm obviously more of a Foster. Like, is that even a serious question?
Well, I don't know if, like, the, like, aggro nature of the Lamberts would outweigh, like, the garbage person. Because you often describe yourself as a garbage person, so.
Yeah, that's more based on my choices. I mean, Christine Lakin. Who plays Al.
We're about to talk about her, yeah.
Oh, she shares my name. And as a tomboy, she is the most interesting character on the show.
She is. And probably...
That's not true. I love Dana. I will always love Dana. She has such seething rage.
She does. Well, let's talk about Christine Lakin. I actually think, even though I love Stacey Keenan, and I have nostalgia for Stacey Keenan because I watch her in a few different things, I think Christine Lakin is the best actor on the show, the best child actor on the show. And her character has the most range because she goes from like full-on young Darlene Connor tomboy to, I mean, they can't really hide the fact that she's gorgeous and she blossoms into a beautiful young woman. And she becomes very, she probably towards the end of the show has more in common and more plot lines with Dana and Karen than she does with the brothers on the show.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is a nice arc for her. You could look at that as writers being like, yeah, we're tired of this tomboy thing. Or the Foster influence rubbing off on her and or teaching her how to be.
Having a mother and sisters, whereas having a father and two brothers, mm-hmm. she's just going to gravitate towards those sort of traits because that's what she's around. Mm-hmm. Like, if there are no dollhouses, then she is going to play with, like, Tonka trunks
or hammers. Or birdhouses, as the case may be in this episode. The episode starts out with Dana sitting at the table studying birdhouses for, like, a woodshop final, which mm-hmm. is not really how woodshop works. And also, did you ever woodshop?
No.
I didn't either. I kind of wish I did.
I had jewelry making.
You had that? I think I knew this. I think we talked about this before. I understand that that was a course that existed at your school. I wish I had taken woodshop because now that I aspire to be, like, sort of handy with things, there's probably some basic skills I should probably know.
I wish I had confidence hanging shelves. I don't. I do it, but I'm not confident.
I just did it, and I put glass on it. That's how confident I was in my shelf hanging.
I'm terrified. I'm just going to hear a bunch of crashes and screams. Like, it was very daring of you to put your antique blue glass on that shelf immediately as opposed to testing it for a day or two with something else that wouldn't break immediately if it fell.
I mean, I guess I should do that. Dana is studying.
Hey, Dana, what are you working on?
Believe me, JT, you wouldn't be interested.
Fine. I try to show a little interest in my new family, and you shut me down. I'm hurt.
Okay. These are some sketches for a birdhouse I'm making for woodshop class. If I don't ace this project, it's going to bring down my whole grade point average.
You're right, Dana. I'm not interested.
Do you know, do you happen to know what Stacey Keenan's doing now?
Real estate.
No, she quit acting after Step by Step and she went to law school and she is an assistant district attorney for LA County District Attorney.
That makes me so happy.
And she practices law under her real name, Anastasia Sogorski. Stacey Keenan was a stage name. But yeah, good for her. Enter JT.
Who makes chocolate milk in the... What's their family last name again?
Foster.
Lambert. No.
Lambert. Yeah, they're Lambert. Is that something they do frequently on the show?
Yes.
Okay, because that scene was very, like...
It's like one of the, like, the standard jokes of the first season is watching all the Lambert kids make chocolate milk by pouring the chocolate syrup in their mouth and then the milk and then switching their heads around, which I was trying to find a reach around for, and I just, like, exhausted myself or got bored of, like, the exercise. But I'm sure there is a reach around for it.
I would say the reach around could be that the Fosters are a lot more concerned with protocol and being seen as proper. And the Lamberts just want to get the thing done and they don't care. And you actually see that reflected in the storyline between Al and Dana, which I won't spoil. But yeah, it comes down to Dana wants things done properly and Al doesn't care as long as she gets a means to the proper end.
I mean, Al is more realistic about the way life works. Like, someone who is good at building birdhouses should build birdhouses, and people who are good at writing book reports should write book reports.
Yes, but that's not how high school works. High school makes you try a bunch of fucking stuff that you are never going to do and never going to be good at, and you just feel shitty about yourself.
But it's important to expose all children from all walks of life to their choices.
This is true.
Yes. Yes, Al should, in fact, read Tom Sawyer.
I may have never read Tom Sawyer. I read Huckleberry Finn.
I also read Huckleberry Finn and not Tom Sawyer. I mean,
which is the much better, more important book.
Because it's about something.
Yeah. But it's one of the things where I'm like, I'm just never going to read it now. Enter Karen, played by Angela Watson.
I can't believe it. Why does this always happen to me?
What's wrong?
You know the sophomore dance that everybody is going to?
Don't tell me. No one's asked you?
Get real, rat face. Everyone's asked me. The problem is, I can't decide who to go with. Dana, what am I gonna do?
Karen, I think I've got it.
I knew I could count on you.
Listen very carefully. I want you to go upstairs.
Yeah? And?
That's it. Just go upstairs.
Karen is dressed like a hot dog on a stick girl, but instead of the hot dog on a stick colors, it's like rainbow colors. It's a very sexy look for someone who's like...
14?
Yeah, she is very young. She's also gorgeous.
Yes.
She's like... stunningly beautiful. She reminds me of, you've seen Battle Royale, yeah?
Yes.
Remember the mean pretty girl who, like, kills everybody? She looks like that girl remarkably, actually.
This is her only scene in the episode, but I got very excited because what turned out to be not a storyline is that she is upset because all the boys have asked her to the sophomore dance, which I don't know if sophomore dances are a thing, but I confuse it with the storyline later in the series where she's fielding dates, and Carol makes her go with her friend's son, who's a nerd or a loser of some sort. But then later in the episode, like, his sleeves get ripped off because he's a klutz, and you see he just has, like, the nicest arms and is actually a very handsome man despite just wearing glasses. And it's like, okay, Karen. I guess my high school had those kids too, who are like
hot nerds.
Yeah, like, are like just unpopular kids who were very attractive and nice, but like for whatever reason, like the popularity bug just didn't bite them, I guess. But like, me as a trained observer would have been like, you should be popular. You are very attractive.
I think a lot of quietly gay children have very, that be like, you're the person who should be popular, not this dum dum over here. Karen should be popular. She's exceptionally pretty. It is weird that like, this fake storyline is introduced just to remind us that she's popular. I don't know. It doesn't really go anywhere. Angela Watson, do you know what she's doing nowadays?
Criminal defense attorney.
She quit acting as well, and she started CAST, Child Actors Supporting Themselves, because she was very dismayed to learn as Step by Step was wrapping up, their parents squandered all of her money. She had nothing to show for 7 years. She was on a popular sitcom, and she does these things where she teaches other child actors how to protect your shit and not let your parents steal all your money. I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
She also became a country singer for a little while. I like that too. JT, Brandon Call, also quit acting. I actually couldn't find what he was doing now, but in an effort to find out what he might be doing now, I found this weird article that seems like something I would have heard about back in the day, but did not at all, where he was coming back from set, driving from the Step by Step set back to his house and got in a dispute with another driver who shot him in both of his arms. Somehow I don't remember him ever not being on the show, so like, he must have not shot him very badly. This seems like the kind of story that like we would have heard about on like 2020 or like Extra or something.
A current affair.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Yeah, anyway. Now enter Al, who they're trying to make look tomboyish, and she's like a very cute little kid who's about to become a beautiful young woman. She's dressed like one of the Burger King Kids Club kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of bright colors, baggy in the right places. Mm-hmm. Just like down for a real fun time.
Hey, is anyone using the VCR?
What video did you rent?
It's Tom Sawyer.
Who?
I have to do a stupid book report.
You're doing a book report, so you rented the movie? You people have the worst study habits.
Insult our manners, criticize our clothes, but please, please, don't put down our study habits.
Again, she wants things done the proper way. The Lamberts don't care.
Shockingly, they don't move forward with that subplot until the a following scene. But really, right off the bat, it should have been like, okay, well, let's just trade off here. And we don't have to talk about this falling too much.
I think we do, because it does tie in. I have theories why it ties in a little bit, but we can just move quickly with it. But yeah, the fact that Dana did not immediately realize that she should do the birth report and Al should make her birdhouse means that Dana's not quite as smart as we would like to think she is.
Well, it would have missed a comedy beat of how bad her birdhouse turns out.
That's true. We do have to see that shitty birdhouse. It's a crappy birdhouse.
Yeah, no smart person would have actually, I don't care how bad you are with woodworking tools, like you'd be able to like, I don't know, get a roof that both sides are the right size or at least somewhat equivalent.
She's strikingly bad at this. Christine Lakin, we should also say, has acted opposite our friend Tony Rodriguez on that show Little Darlings? Hollywood Darlings, which is Jodie Sweetin, Christine Lakin, and the youngest girl from Seventh Heaven, whose name I can't recall right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But Tony had nothing but nice things to say about Christine Lakin. My favorite Christine Lakin memory is when she was in the Veronica Mars movie and like Kristen Ritter and some other characters threw her corpse off of a boat.
My favorite Christine Lakin memory is when I got her drive-on pass for Warner Brothers. And instead of having like a couple hours, I had like a better parking lot and the entire day.
Do you think you probably fucked her over? Like asking for a pass and she didn't get it?
I'm sure she just then like said, you are mistaken. Please give me the proper drive-on.
I'm Christine fucking Lakin. I can destroy you. Yeah. No, she seems very nice. Do you remember the actual Veronica Mars she was in? It's the one with Leighton Meester and Adam Scott. That was a really fucking good episode. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I think I saw her post Step by Step doing stuff. She is the only child actor from the show who is still acting, and she acts pretty frequently now.
Good.
Yeah. Scene two, Frank and Carol. Frank and Carol are horny. And
this is the C-plot of the episode.
Like, it really is just two scenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Frank wants to fuck, and Carol's like, that sounds nice, but I'm going to go to bed. And
no, then she's like, I'm going to take a bath, and if you're nice, I'll videotape it for you.
Oh.
Which seems like a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like, just let him watch.
Yeah. I mean, that would be more practical. Yeah. JT wanders in needing a job.
Now, this entire scene, I told you how bothered I was by this. There is a bit of set decoration, which is just like a tray with like a carafe of water and glasses. They're just full of ice, but no water.
Mm-hmm.
And like, why is that there? Like,
on the edge of the coffee table.
On the edge of the coffee table. Just like, that ice is going to melt. Who's drinking this? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, man.
So what becomes of this pitcher of ice, Glenn?
Well, JT asks Frank for money. And Frank's like, well, why don't you work for me instead? And it's something about JT being very coordinated. And then he kicks over the tray of water and glasses. Like,
he's clumsy. He's a clumsy thing.
Turns out he's clumsy. And it's just like, ugh. I get so angry.
Because
of the very obvious tray of glasses and ice.
Would it have like been satisfying for you if just nothing had ever happened to it? Like if
I wanted it to not be there. They could have shown he was clumsy in other ways, like maybe falling backwards over the chair, or I don't know.
Clumsy people can find any number of ways to display their clumsiness, in fact.
Yeah.
So JT needs a job. Frank has hired him, and Frank is so overjoyed that his son is joining him on a construction build. He gives him a tool belt that he can't really seem to lift on his own.
I thought this is a good bit of physical comedy between mm-hmm. JT and Carol, where the tool belt kept like moving JT in different directions and knocking him over, and Carol was having to catch him.
Mm-hmm.
It was all very well choreographed, I thought.
And then he has a little hard hat as well.
Yes.
That's too big for him.
Now check this out. That's beautiful. Carol, look at him. Now, who does he remind you of?
One of the village people.
Start each day with a laugh. I love it.
And of course, there's a village people joke because of the hard hat. And mm-hmm. I was like, is this the first gay joke of the episode?
Kind of. I mean, you don't really see where it's going necessarily, but like, yeah. I mean, that's Village People is a family-friendly sitcom's way of making a gay joke. So they go off to work, and then we see Dana working on her shitty, shitty birdhouse that was going to destroy her grade point average when Al comes in, and they realize, oh, Al's really good at building stuff. What if there's some way we could switch places and do each other's work? And they do, because that's the obvious way that the storyline goes. Is it this point? The reason I want to talk about this is that it is very annoying to me that there is a child in the house who has been displaying like skill with like crafts and construction for years. And it has not once occurred to Frank that he should focus on this child and let JT be. I don't even know what he's good at.
That's the question I kept having this entire episode, because I didn't remember the series super well. Like, I remember storylines and episodes, but like, I don't remember what JT's particular skill set was.
He may not have one.
That's the thing, is like, I thought, like, did they erase him being good with tools just for this episode?
I don't think so, because he does end up in a relationship with a girl who's a mechanic, and like, she's the handy one. And he's in a relationship with a girl who's better at traditional masculine activities. Also, they need a tomboy, because at that point, Al wasn't really the tomboy anymore.
All right. I mean, I wasn't too off-put with Frank overlooking Al right away, because she's just younger. Like, JT would be the one who would age into the opportunity to work alongside Frank before Al.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be shitty of him also to, like, jump over JT and just say, I'm going to make Al my like 9-year-old daughter my business partner mm-hmm. rather than my older son.
Yeah, you're right. Practically, it doesn't make sense. It's just weird. It's weird to me because the way this storyline, this episode goes, is recognizing that some people are good at some things and some people are not good at some things. And you should go with your strengths. But then it punishes Dana and Al for doing that very thing, because the way they do it is sort of illegal, even though that was very smart of them. That's how it works in the real world. There's a reason that like I don't do my own like taxes. I hired someone to help me do my taxes because they're good at organization and numbers, and I'm not, turns out.
Anyway. Well, that's news to me, Drew.
You know I can't do math in my head. So the next scene is hilarious physical comedy.
I have a lot of gripes
Please.
About how Frank runs his business. I guess it's a Saturday, so maybe this is supposed to be an extra day of construction that he was not planning on, but there is no crew.
No.
There's no crew. He has his son there who's perhaps not done any sort of training. This is addition to someone's house.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder what questions they have.
It's a very, very tiny addition.
Yeah. I wonder what sort of question. And so it looks tiny because it's empty, but once you get furniture in there, I'm sure it'll look fine. And all of the hijinks that happen in this scene are largely Frank's fault, mm-hmm. although they're framed as JT's fault. But mm-hmm. it's really like Frank doesn't have good safety practices. He takes his eyes off JT pretty much the second after he gives him a task mm-hmm. without telling him how to do the task. So like JT has to cut some wood mm-hmm. and ends up cutting the cord, which is probably the best outcome that could have happened because like if you handed me a power saw, like especially because like Frank is like bending over like right where the trajectory of the saw is,
mm-hmm.
his spine could be cut. And then
How do you feel when I make you stand on a piece of wood so I can use my buzz saw to cut it? Is that
it makes me nervous, Drew?
good to know.
He has JT pull away loose nails without telling him that sometimes when you are building walls, you prop up the built walls with a piece of wood
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't fall over, and so JT removes the loose screw from that, so entire wall falls over. Luckily, the window frames where it falls on Frank, so he's fine.
The audience is loving this, by the way.
Yeah.
They're having a great time watching these hilarious...
I mean, it is an impressive that they built that set just for the scene.
That one gag. Yeah. It's not unrealistic the way Frank acts. Like, you're saying, like, yeah, he's screwed up in all these ways, but not so much my dad, but other male figures in my life have often not adequately prepared me to do stuff and then got mad at me when it didn't turn out properly.
I said I was sorry.
I don't consider you a parent type figure. I tell everyone you're my ward, remember?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I put Glenn on my emergency contact at my new doctor's office. I said he was my ward. There's a certain sort of man who forgets what it's like to learn something and doesn't know how to express that because they're bad at communicating anything, really. And then they act like it's your fault when you don't immediately become as good as they are at a given task. A lot of bosses who did that kind of thing. We move to Carol's salon and JT comes in and he mentions that Frank fired him in no uncertain terms, really.
Why aren't you working with your dad?
Well, I'm not sure. I think my dad fired me.
What'd he say?
Get out of here and never come back.
Which part aren't you sure about?
And Carol is Penny? Is that her sister's name? Penny? So her sister Penny is a terrible employee and bad at everything, and her mother is also of no help whatsoever. So she hires JT to help him to help deal with all of her clients, and he becomes
a shampoo boy.
Shampoo boy.
I have a question because I didn't watch any other episodes right before or after this. But what is his wardrobe usually?
Because not that.
Because I feel like they gayed him up for this.
They did. He's wearing dark jeans and a dark tucked-in shirt with a belt. And he looks...
And the sleeves are rolled up.
Yeah. He looks like a little European.
Yeah. He looks like the gay... Like, he looks like what... He matches the 90s portrayal of gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Simple, tidy, with a little bit of flair.
Mm-hmm. That's also how in the second to last season, Bronson Pinchot joins the cast as Jean-Luc, a French hairdresser who like works with Carol. That's how he dresses. And I don't think he's necessarily coded as gay, but as you'll hear about when you listen to our Perfect Strangers bonus episode, there's a lot of queerness surrounding Bronson Pinchot and basically everything he does.
Oh.
Yeah. It makes sense that JT needs money and what Carol is asking him to do is something he feels like he's probably better at than anything Frank wants him to do.
Well, so he does it for horny reasons.
I know. That's the problematic part. Because she said someone needs to shampoo Janet, and Janet comes out, and Janet's like early 20s, maybe. She's what we're led to assume is a sexy young woman of the time.
Carol, you know, my daughter's still waiting for her shampoo. Oh, right. Oh, Janet, I almost forgot. JT. JT, would you shampoo Janet for me, please?
Whoa, no way. I don't even like shampooing my hair.
JT, please, no. Do me a big favor. Save my life. Carol, I am so busy.
Carol, I've got a wedding. Carol, I'm still waiting for my shampoo.
I'm sorry, Janet. I'll be with you
soon. Janet? You're Janet? Why didn't you tell me Janet was waiting? I'm JT. I'll be doing your shampoo today.
And he's just happy. I think he literally says that Is it now or later that he said that he's happy to have a way to touch girls that won't get me sent to the principal's office?
I think it's later, but I mean, yeah, the sentiment is there from the beginning.
Okay. So I guess we can talk about it later, but it sets up a really problematic thing that when this all resolves itself in like about 5 minutes.
I mean, that parents would rather their children be horny freaks than gay?
Yeah, same thing with the nerd problem. And like, that's the way you unqueer a nerd is by making them a horny pervert, basically. I guess we'll talk about when they have their little resolution. But it's also weird that the women in the salon become kind of infatuated with him and talk
about... It's super weird and creepy.
So then the bartender says, I was talking to the duck. Oh!
Oh, JT. If I weren't getting married this afternoon.
That actor was 15 when he filmed this scene. So I don't know how old JT's actually supposed to be, but he's not older than 15. And it's weird that like...
Like adult women want his magic fingers all over their scalp.
It's really weird. It's a really awkward, weird thing and I hate it. Also, not a realistic thing. Like adult women will sometimes be infatuated with like a cute little boy who's like 9 and is like precocious. And when you're 15, you're basically about as gross as you're ever going to get. And it's weird that anyone would want to like date a 15-year-old, even a 15-year-old.
I don't know. You can get grosser. I have a picture from my junior year yearbook where my dad saves it. And he thinks every time he brings it out, and he brings it out often. I mean, I look terrible. For some reason, my barber had cut off my sideburns. I still had braces. Wasn't a good look for me. And my dad... Oh, it's just like, oh, it's okay. You're like 13. Everyone looks like that when they're 13. I was like, no, I was 17.
Why don't you burn
17?
Why don't you burn the picture?
I've tried. There are many copies of it.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's rough.
But yeah, it's when we come back from commercial that the gross bride is hitting on this child, and then Frank walks in to apologize and say, "It's okay, JT. We'll try again next weekend."
He's like, "No, I'm good." And Frank's reaction is, Carol, I need to speak with you in private right away.
You just do whatever you want. If you want to be a hairdresser.
I don't know if it's intentional, but he's like, the thing he has trouble with is saying that his son is and he gets stuck on the H noise. And then he's actually saying hairdresser.
Yeah. Like, oh, you mean you think that the joke is he could say homo?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way he says shampoo boy. And, yes. Like, emphasizes shampoo boy and the little twinkling he does with his fingers, because it's not that JT wants to work with his hands. He wants to work with his fingers.
Right.
It is the intricacy and the delicacy that makes it a feminine task.
Right. At the very least, Carol immediately calls out his behavior as being sexist, sexism is at the heart of homophobia usually. So she's right, but, like... He's fine with a woman working in a hair salon. He's not fine with a man working in a hair salon. Certainly not fine with his son working in it. But like, it basically is, it's a homophobia problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't want people to think that his son is soft or dainty or girly in any way. And then you come down to the heart of it that he's worried that this means that you'll never have Lambert and Son construction.
If he works in a beauty salon, what happens to Lambert and Son, huh?
This is not about JT. This is about you.
Well, Carol, I always thought that he would come into the business with me and we'd work side by side, you know, partners.
Frank, that's such a sweet dream. But it's your dream, not his.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
This all happens very quickly. Yeah. Like, it goes from conflict to resolution.
And the music swells up here. Like, it's a heartfelt... learned thing when really like this was brought up, this scene, it's resolved, this scene. At no point before this did Frank express wanting an heir to his work. And so like really the conflict is he thinks his son is gay.
Mm-hmm.
And because they couldn't have that conversation on TGIF, it becomes I want someone to carry on my name and work, which is also sometimes tied to homophobia. When parents react to a son or daughter coming out, being like, oh, well, I was just really looking forward to grandchildren. It's like, well, that can still happen. And maybe even if I were straight, that would also not be a possibility. So let's just like divorce the two.
Right. So when does JT come in? He comes into the scene, right?
Yeah.
So when he comes in, that's when he like emphasizes the fact that like, this is my way of touching women.
I don't want to be a hairdresser.
Oh. I'm just doing it because it's an easy way to make some money and touch girls without being sent to the principal's office.
So if I can have a Glenn moment and say like, there's something here that could be an interesting piece of TV, but like, I guess this wouldn't have worked on a TGIF sitcom back then. It should have, because I think the lesson makes sense. The way I would love this episode to work is that JT goes to work for Carol, and the reason is that he wants to touch women because he likes women and he's horny and all that. And in working for the salon, he has to wash the hair of a classmate that he's not attracted to. He wouldn't be someone that he usually wants to touch, but he has to because it's his job. And in being in the shampoo room with her and just making casual conversation with her, he finds out that they actually have a lot in common. And he takes a step towards learning that, like, oh, I could have a platonic relationship with a female classmate who I don't want to date or make out with or even really touch at all. I'm just treating her like I would treat a person. And that would be the breakthrough he makes of like, oh, okay, I see. Like, all of these women are actually people. They're not just female bodies for me to touch.
Yes, but the sitcom resolution to that would have to be then her not wanting to hang out with him because he's just a shampoo boy.
Yeah. Yep. Like, get away from me, shampoo boy. Yeah. I don't want to talk to you. Or he's working under the idea that she might really like him. And she's like, no, I don't like you at all. Like, I have a boyfriend. Shut up. Mm.
But that's not what this episode is about. They don't want to tackle the fact that men are gross.
Yes. They don't want to do that. They is just taken as a given that men are gross. And that's what's frustrating. And then the next scene is also frustrating. It's frustrating because you see Al has made a beautiful birdhouse that she's taken a lot of pride in, looks very professional. And
well, before we get to that scene, I just want to talk about Frank's relief when JT.
Oh, right. That sorry. Yeah. You're absolutely right. That is also really fucked up. That's the part
the main thing you're angry about is that.
Yeah, that's the thing where he understands that like my son can be whatever he wants to be, he doesn't have to follow in my footsteps, but thank God he still likes girls. You're just like, oh, that's the part that like, even though I didn't know I was gay back then, that's just a weird thing to jam into kids' heads of like, yeah, you can be whatever you want, but not too much, because then you're gonna gross out your own parents. Parents can understand your choices to an extent, but push it too far and they're...
Or even if they do understand all your choices, like, you're putting a lot on their plate.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't want them to be extra worried.
And it's your fault. Like, their emotional reaction to you as a person is not their thing they have to deal with. That's your thing that you're responsible for. It's a cause and effect relationship. And yeah, it's your fault.
Yeah.
So fucking makes me so mad. So a lot of this episode makes me mad. The next scene also makes me more mad. But yeah, this is a fucked up thing. Is that it in that scene?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the next scene, we see Al's beautiful birdhouse.
It is very beautiful.
Dana comes down with her book report. And little Brendan, played by Josh Byrne, who has barely done anything. This is the first time we see him this episode, right?
He gets kidnapped later seasons, right? Never comes back.
He actually is missing from the last season. He gets completely written out of the show. So they have a baby. And then the baby gets instantly aged up to like a 5-year-old, and she's played by the Welch's grape juice girl. Mm-hmm. And now that child is younger and cuter, this child just gets 86 when they move to CBS. And they don't ever even mention him again. Yeah, it's fucked up. They also add not James Marsden, but Jason Marsden. Do you know that actor?
Mm-hmm.
He becomes opening credits as Dana's boyfriend. So they have room for a boyfriend, but not the child that's been on the show for 6 years. It's kind of fucked up. He overhears what this little drug deal that Dana and Al have worked out together. And he's like, isn't that cheating?
It is.
It is. But like, it sucks that even though that is cheating, that's not supposed to be how high school works. It sucks that.
Well, I mean, Al's definitely not in high school.
Oh, yeah. She's the elementary school, whatever. So that's not how school works. You're supposed to do your own work and learn things. And sometimes you're bad at stuff and that's fine. I understand that there's like an ethical element to this. I guess little Brendan is right. But it sucks that the takeaway is you can be really good at things. And like, I guess, let's see, what am I trying to say? The takeaway is don't go with your strengths.
No, I mean, that's not the takeaway. The takeaway is like, you should you shouldn't shy away from tasks just because you're not good at them. Mm-hmm. Like, in some world, Al may have, once forced to read Tom Sawyer, may learn a love of literature and her life would be changed forever.
Mm.
So I don't have a problem with the messaging of this plot line. I was just joking when I said, like, that's not how the world works, because it's not.
It is not. That is how school works.
Yeah. Okay. But, I mean, there is an importance behind it. I don't think it was this little boy's place to say
mm-hmm.
goddamn thing about it. Like, let your older siblings do what they want. But as far as precocious young actors go, he is not bad.
No, he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I cannot emphasize enough how beautiful this birdhouse is.
Right. Also, I got to say, their living room's also beautiful. It's a beautiful house that they're...
It's like Craftsman.
Yes. It's a house in Pasadena we could drive to right now if we wanted to. But, like, the way the interior of their living room looks is actually aged very well. A lot of 90s sitcom living rooms look like garbage. I feel like...
There's a lot of woodwork.
Yeah.
There's a lot of design. The layout's proper for a sitcom, but also for living. Mm-hmm. Like, the dining room is a sort of back set from the living room.
Mm-hmm.
Still visible, but not, like, there.
The dining room that they never use because the camera really couldn't get back there. Yeah.
I mean, the kitchen's awful.
There's a lot of fake plants. I don't like the fake plants.
Well, everything the fake plants and also, like not Formica, but, like, the sort of cloth-like material sometimes used to, like, laminate countertops.
I didn't notice that.
It wasn't for me.
I'm sure there's a word for it. But I assume that they have more money than the average sitcom family in the 90s.
I wouldn't assume that.
They have a nicer house than, like, Tim Taylor does.
Yeah, well, he's awful.
I mean, he's awful. I don't know what Carol's... Maybe Carol's dead husband was a brain surgeon.
Maybe.
Before she killed him. So then enter Frank and Dana and Al are going at it again. And he breaks them apart. And
They're actually fighting on the...
Physically
or, like, rolling around.
Right. He pulls them apart. And so Dana's the one who's like, oh, I can't. Dana's the one who backs out first and is like, this is wrong because the Foster family believes in doing things properly and the Lambert family just wants things done. So she's the one that pulls the deal back. Al gets pissed. And the one line that actually made me laugh this entire episode is Frank saying,
hey, 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 girls, come on now. What's going on here? What are you doing?
I was just... showing Al the book report I did on Tom Sawyer. Hope it helped.
You know, Al, you should listen to Dana. She really has her head on straight.
That's only because you interrupted us.
That is a good sitcom line.
Mm-hmm.
That is really great. I like that. One actual laugh in an entire...
You didn't laugh at the tool belt comedy?
No.
Oh, I was so tickled by it.
Physical comedy doesn't often make me, I don't know. I'm not the biggest physical comedy person, it turns out, which is, for the purpose of podcast, is great.
Cut to Frank being impressed by the birdhouse,
mm-hmm.
which is impressive, and then starts grooming Al to be Lambert and son.
You made this birdhouse?
Yeah, but if I had more time, I would have dovetailed the edges.
Yeah, and maybe done something a little fancier with the routing.
I don't know. I think sometimes people go a little overboard with routing.
Yeah, you're right. Al, do you know how to use a hot glue gun?
Come on, Dad. Any idiot can use a hot glue gun.
That's what I thought, too. What size hard hat do you wear?
Which is good that he finally gets there, but it's also weird that he never noticed this before because he was so set. He had gender rules
but
so
was
set.
Were her carpeting skills like a plot point in the first four episodes?
No, but she said that she's been making birdhouses like that since she was a little kid. So this is something she's been doing for a while. And the read I'm offering is he... wouldn't have ever taken any of that seriously because Al is female. Even though she's like a very tomboyish female, she's still a girl. So it kind of does work out eventually that he sees that there's possibility there that he didn't before, but it's annoying that like he had to be shown that.
And his reward is the resolution of the C plot, the mm-hmm. horny bath. He gets to take a horny bath with Carol.
And they run off upstairs?
Yeah, because all the kids are at a movie or something, and they realize they're home alone.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to go be horny.
I don't feel like all the kids would go hang out at the movies together.
JT was at a sleepover, and the younger ones were at a movie.
Well, end of episode. I'm probably not going to talk about Step by Step again, I would imagine.
I don't know. I think that, I mean, maybe I'll hunt for an episode, but I do think that Step by Step presented a lot of, like, gender issues for children watching it.
They did.
Which I don't know. Even if they didn't handle them great, like, that was sort of a source of the comedy and conflict, and it's interesting to look back on.
Probably. I mean, there might be another good one in there, especially with Al learning how to be a girl. Why do I not like this show? Why do I think this show is lesser than...
That those are your issues that you have to deal with.
I have a really hard time putting my finger on it, but I can think of, like, almost every other TJF show, there's just more substance to it on some level. And I don't hate this show, and I like Stacey Keenan for whatever reason. I like Christine Lakin. I don't know.
Maybe the men on the show just made you mad.
They are jerks. The show did make me think of my family, since my brother worked with my dad at a family business that also employed an uncle and three cousins, and I never worked there.
But you didn't want to.
I didn't want to. But I think the expectation was that I would, because they didn't look at, like, what my skill set is and realize that...
Your skill set is gay podcasting.
Skill set is research, words, journalism, thank you. But, like, it is weird... I don't know how they interpret what my life is now, because, like, they don't really understand podcasting as an industry or anything that could be turned into anything sustainable. So my life must look about as silly as magic fingers in that hair salon, I guess. So I feel bad about that now. So thanks, Step by Step.
I'm sorry.
It's fine. I'm glad if people want to tweet at you their Cody Lambert / fiction, where should they tweet those tweets at?
Oh, I would love to see that. I read that. So you can find me on Twitter at I Write Wrongs. That is IWRITE Wrongs, also with a W. Or hit me up on Instagram. It's at Bros Quartz, BROS Quartz.
And you can find me on Twitter at Drew G. Mackey, M-A-C-K-I-E. You can follow Gayest Episode Ever on Twitter at Gayest Episode. Listen to previous episodes at GayestEpisodeEver.com. If you have just subscribed and never gone to the site, I am trying to work through a problem right now where two episodes are not showing up on the feed anywhere. It's a SoundCloud problem. I don't know how to fix it, but the episodes are Everyone Loves Raymond and the second Cheers episode with Harvey Fierstein.
Oh, no.
Those numbers were really low. And I'm like, it's weird that no one wants to listen to those two shows in particular. It's because you can only listen to them if you go to our website, basically. So there's a chance there's two whole episodes of Gayest Episode Ever that you've never heard before. Go to gayestepisodeever.com, go to episodes, and look up Everyone Loves Raymond and Cheers too.
I love the Everybody Loves Raymond episode.
If you randomly work for SoundCloud and can help me fix this issue, please contact me, because I think those are good episodes and I wish more people could listen to them.
People are all horny for Ray Romano after the Oscars last night.
Why? What happened?
You're going to have to look it up.
Oh, okay. I did not watch this. We were recording this the day after the Oscars. I was watching Step by Step and reruns of The Simpsons while everyone else is watching the Oscars. I think I spent my Sunday night rather well. Please give us a rate and review on whatever podcast listening app you happen to find us. iTunes is the one that makes the most difference. This is a Table Cakes podcast. Table Cakes is a Los Angeles-based podcasting company, and you can find out about all our other shows at tablecakes.com. Our logo was designed by Rob Wilson. See more of his cool stuff at robwilsonwork.com.
Or just pick up, like, an issue of the New York Times Sunday edition. He's in it often. His work is beautiful.
It really is. The transcripts for our show are done by Sarah Neal, and you can contact her for transcription work that you might need by going to therapytranscripts.com or click the link in the show notes. Once again, our Patreon is patreon.com/gayestepisodeever. Please give us money. You help us make this show by giving us money. Are you looking at my dog right now?
Mm-hmm.
What's he doing?
Breathing. I mean, you should be glad that he is breathing.
I'm very happy about that. Glenn, if you had to pick, you can live in the Full House, the Family Matters house, or the Step by Step house. Which one would you pick and why?
The Full House, because it's San Francisco and probably worth so much money right now.
I mean, it probably is worth a lot of money right now, but then you'd have to live in San Francisco. Sorry, San Francisco. I don't like
I've never been to San Francisco.
It's beautiful. a few days out of the year, but they get fog, and having lived in Santa Barbara,
I love fog.
Okay, then you'll love it up there. Everything will be gray. You'll have to carry a light sweater everywhere you go.
Love it.
Okay. I live in Santa Barbara for long enough that fog is toxic and makes me very, very sad. Obviously, I'm picking the Step by Step house. It's also, it would be in Los Angeles.
It'd be in Wisconsin.
I don't want to live in Wisconsin. I
mean, that's where the house is.
We can drive to the house in Pasadena right now.
That's not what really the question is.
I am the one who posed the question.
Fine. Enjoy your not Wisconsin house.
Podcast over.
Bye forever.
Breathing because it's fun.
A Table Cakes production.